All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com. Delivered by DoorDash.
Welcome to episode 111 of the DFO Rundown. I'm Jason Greger alongside Frank Saravalli. And what a night in the National Hockey League last night, Frank. We're 10 days from the trade deadline, and there are stories all over the place.
Where do we start?
Oh, gee, I don't know. I do want to start. Well, I'm going to start just with the Chychrun goal. And then, of course, the Nedeljkovic. He putted it and hammered it in between his own legs into the net. Like those two goals in that short of sequence. Oh, man, I was howling. That was just it was like foreshadowing on what a crazy night it would be.
Yeah. The Nedeljkovic one, I can't begin to process what he was thinking. I don't know. If you're going to take a swipe like that, wouldn't you make sure that your five hole is covered? I don't know.
Well, the chances of that, and true story, Frank, as you will like this story. So I'll never forget the Ranch Golf and Country Club in Edmonton, just outside of Edmonton. My buddy Hutch, he's teeing off on the second hole. It's a par five. He's a righty. So there's a fence right behind him. Right. And we're standing on the other side. He swings. As his driver, he goes through his own legs. Dude, I've never seen it again. Like I was on the ground. And basically that's what, like the odds of Nedeljkovic, like mishitting it's one thing, but to hit it from that angle and have it go off your stick through your legs, like that's
must have been some serious English on that thing.
Oh, babe, it was just too funny not to chuckle at. And you know, the Chychrun one, to quote the Darren Dutition, man, you could time that with a sundial. It was so funny. Leafs fan players are diving all over and the puck's just slowly going in. It was hilarious.
What about the overtime sequence for the Leafs? Maybe not that hilarious.
No. Hey, Austin Matthews. It's interesting because we saw it in the Edmonton game on Ovechkin with Zach Hyman on an empty net and they didn't call the hooky. Now,
two games, two nights.
Oshie tied it, but Edmonton won. So in Edmonton's case, that's why I said the refs were lucky. Edmonton won because it's not as big of an issue. But when it's in Toronto, overtime, you know, Matthews, who usually doesn't say a whole bunch on the ice, voices his displeasure.
He was livid.
But you know what, Frank? That's going to overshadow what the story of the night in Toronto was. is Mrazek's in a world of hurt right now. Jack Campbell's injured. So what are they going to do? Are they going to go to an unheralded? Are they suddenly going? They're going to maybe hope they can have their own Binnington storyline, or are they going to go out and acquire a goalie?
I don't know how they wouldn't go out and acquire a goalie at this point. I mean, look, here's the other thing that I think we probably should start talking about, or at least thinking about, is when you see all these things add up, maybe the Leafs just do nothing.
Because they
Does
realize
that sound outrageous to you?
That they're not going to, oof. I just don't know if they would have a mentality to say, you know what? I just don't think we can do it. So we're going to do nothing. I'd be surprised, but it's hard to get a goalie.
Well, it's hard to get a goalie, but it's also, they don't have any cap space. The way they're playing this with Jake Muzzin, they don't have the flexibility to do anything that they want to do unless they are trading pieces off their roster.
Right. Yeah.
So a hockey trade. I mentioned earlier this week that I think they're making a mistake in terms of how they're managing Muzzin. And you can't tell a healthy player to sit out, but they're still targeting like a month from now for him to come back and play. He's already skating. So what happens if you get to April 10th? Let's just to pick a date out of the hat. And Jake Muzzin, at that point, when he's expected to come back, says, oh, you know what? I'm not feeling so great. I'm still having headaches, discomfort. I mean, head injuries are so unpredictable. You can feel good this week, feel terrible the next. Mm-hmm. So you get through that, and then you've passed the trade deadline. You missed out on the opportunity to add someone with the LTIR space, and he's still maybe not back anyway for the regular season. I just look at what Tampa has done. I look at what Vegas has done, and I say, this is a legitimate injury. If you're the Leafs, don't you just say to Jake Muzzin, hey, we're really concerned about your head injuries, back-to-back concussions. Even when he came back after the first one, his play was no good. He was hesitating. There was serious hesitancy in his game. How do you not address it? And I guess the point being, if they're not going to address it and they're going to let Jake Muzzin come back, because I guess that's technically what you have to do, they can't do anything even if they want to.
Yeah. See, now the LTIR, like you look at Vegas, cause people are like, oh, Vegas with their injuries to Lehner and Smith. Now they'll just activate Stone. See, I don't believe it's that. I think Stone's legit hurt. I think the question would have been, could he have returned with 10 games or 10 days left in the regular season? Possibly. We'll never know. But in the case of Muzzin, because the doctor has to sign his reputation and, you know, his career when it comes to LTIR. But the Muzzin one, Frank, where you're accurate is there's no one can confidently and certainly say, okay, with the concussion, you're going to be healed in 4 weeks. You can give a guess. But concussions from person to person vary significantly on how
let alone two in a really short time frame.
Yes. Yes. Like this is the one where I don't know if anybody would question if Jake Muzzin didn't play again in the regular season because of a concussion. When you look at concussion histories and the vast difference in how some players are out and others will be out 2 months, other guys are out 4 months, depending on, and they both had a concussion because you don't know the severity of it truly.
Why would you question it? Just in the same way I'm not questioning Mark Stone's injury. I think he's legitimately injured. I think Nikita Kucherov was legitimately injured. I've never had a question about the injury. My question with Kucherov was always the timing of it. But in this case, why is Jake Muzzin, like, if he's skating again, why is it in public view, I guess, is the question. Not saying they should be off hiding it, but like, why not throw him on rink 8 at your practice facility way earlier than any cameras get there? All of a sudden, cameras capture this path back. People are talking about it. You know, the Leafs let everyone know that they're targeting somewhere around a month from now. And all of a sudden, you're kind of put yourself in a spot where you're hooped if that's what you even wanted to do.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think Now, there is a big difference. A lot of players, guys can skate, like going on a leisurely skate. Doesn't mean they're close to playing, but sometimes we see them on the ice and we just assume. I've seen lots of guys in November start skating who don't return until the end of December. But because it's November, you know, it's not considered as big of an issue. So, but you're right. I think there is at times, you know, you wonder, like, it's probably for the mental well-being of a guy like Jake Muzzin. He's got to get back on the ice. He wants to feel better. And even if he's just going for a leisurely stroll, because he's probably not pushing himself to any high limits, because that's normally where you'll have some symptoms of not feeling well. But it's one where Toronto, it's going to be fascinating to see what they do, Frank, because you know, we talked about it a month ago, like what Kyle Dubas and the need for them to win at least a series. And it's going to be difficult because they got Tampa and Florida. I said at the start of the year, Toronto could have a great year and still technically lose because they're in a really tough division with those two teams.
Well, that's my point about maybe they just do nothing. Like, is that an outrageous idea to you? Because they could make all the right moves. They could trade for a goalie. They could, you know, put Jake Muzzin on LTIR. They could find a defenseman to add to their group. They could maybe improve themselves on the wing. And they could still just as easily lose.
Nah, I'll say this though, man, they can score goals right now. They're like, they are scoring for fun. The problem is they're giving up goals for fun. So it's
that's the fifth straight game that the Leafs have given up four or more.
Yeah. Oh, it's, hey man, it's 80. It's old school hockey as a fan of offense.
Good luck for a team that has historical scoring woes in the playoffs to think that they can outrun it.
Oh yeah, no, it's valid to question it. There's no, I don't think there's anybody doubting that. It's not looking good, but luckily for them, playoffs start May 1st, not March 12th. And they're going to have to try to figure it out.
But so who's facing more pressure, the Leafs or the Golden Knights?
Well, I have to think it's the Leafs because like their management, they haven't won anything. Vegas has overexceeded. And I know it's 5 years and people say, well, now, you know, their fans, it's like they booed them for the first time. And I was like, well, now Vegas fans are real NHL fans because they've had a little bit of heartache in the regular season. They haven't had none ever in franchise history, which is amazing to say. So I'd still say it's Toronto. Whereas I'll say this though, Frank, I think Vegas, because they feel like, you know, they want to win and Kelly McCrimmon's highly aggressive. I think there might be more like he'll make a bigger splash and maybe make a move. Like just because he's like, we got to win. And he'll go after it, even though I think there's probably more pressure on the management team in Toronto because they haven't had the success that Vegas has had.
See, I don't know. I actually wonder if there's more in Vegas. Like they've created this expectation now of Stanley Cup or bust. And by the way, everyone looks toward long-term, you know, what happens if the Leafs don't win a series? What happens in Vegas? They got to be cap compliant next year.
Yeah. Oh, they'll be trading.
This is really their only kick at the can with this group, this roster, using this exception. You don't get a redo on it. You can't start the year like that.
Yeah, no, it's fair. All right. Like, well, Smith would be off the books, I would assume, next year as a UFA. And they got the thing about Vegas is the difference between Vegas and Toronto is when I look at Toronto's core pieces, they're young. Vegas's core pieces, Frank, are a lot of guys who start with a three.
So doesn't that increase the pressure a little bit?
Yeah, but the organization, I think they'll like, I guess my pressure was the pressure in Vegas. I don't see someone losing their job potentially if they don't win. As far as management goes, coach, you never know. But in Toronto, if they go out, like I think there could be, you know, a few people, more people on the chopping block if they lose, because it'll be like, that's six in a row, where Vegas, this would be the first time.
Yeah. I don't know. I think if they do nothing, there's probably some signal from, you know, the very top of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, not absolving them, but basically saying, look, there's a lot of things stacked against you. Let's not blow our brains out here trying to make this right with, you know, trying to plug all these different holes at the deadline and trade away future pieces that could help our team.
Yeah. Well, Toronto, I think if you look
at basically live for another day.
Yeah. I think though, if you look at Toronto's team, And it's hard because which goalie can you realistically get? But if they could get a goalie who's just consistent, like keep in mind, Jack Campbell since December 1st, has not been good. Right. So if they could get a goaltender who's just like 9-10, Frank, that would make a big difference for them. And I don't know what the cost, how high it would be. I'm just not sure who the goalie is. Like people are talking about Thomas Greiss now in Detroit. And I'm like, Thomas Greiss is 36 with an 8.88 save percentage. Sure, you can get him. But what certainty do you have that he's any better?
They're facing the same situation now that the Oilers have for months. Who's your difference maker? Who's your guaranteed? But it's deeper than that because they don't have the cap space.
Oh, well, you're right.
It's worse than that spot because there's no opportunity to do something even if you want to, unless someone's taking on Mrazek.
No, I was just going to say, like maybe they convince you have to throw in a pick.
Just in the same way that the Oilers would need someone to take Koskinen.
Yeah, I don't think Edmonton's making a goaltending move. I think they're going to stick with their three, and they're waiting here to see. Like I think Koskinen will play tomorrow, and I think you're going to see Stuart Skinner next week, and then they'll kind of go from there.
But. Does Mike Smith just sort of fade into oblivion? Like what happens there?
Yeah, I know that. Like, have you seen any player go on COVID protocol lately, Frank? So I'm wondering if Mike Smith, who hasn't been around, just got, and he was one of the few Oilers who hadn't tested positive for COVID. Maybe he's just tested positive for COVID.
But how many, is this the third sort of longer than expected absence this season for Mike Smith?
Because you say you have the flu bug, right? Or you say he's sick and an illness, and technically you can be. But yeah, but the thing about Smith this time, he's on the roster, right? He's still on the roster. He's not on IR. He's not on LTIR. So, but you're right. The injury bug has not been good for Mike Smith this year. And it's always ended up going longer than the original. Although this time they didn't give any timeline.
But is that because his play has been no good? Like, it's sort of like I think of the Campbell situation. It's like, well, how do you complete the game you had the other day? And now all of a sudden you have a rib injury. And then Morgan Riley comes out and says, well, it's been bothering him for a while. Like, why is he in the net if that's the case? Delayed the process from getting help weeks ago, apparently, to now starting to get help now.
Yeah. Well, I think you've been around long enough to know, Frank, there's lots of guys who play through stuff and then there's injured and there's hurt. And sometimes
if he was getting the stops and if his save percentage was 9.15, he would just keep playing. Am I wrong? This is a reset at the same time. All of a sudden you're out when your game's no good.
Yeah, you could be right. Yeah.
Does that feel any of the same way with Smith, or am I just
no Smith, I think honestly was I think Smith, he hasn't even been around on the team. So I'm going to guess they say illness. And that's why I asked you, like, I haven't looked close enough to see our teams just, instead of telling everybody that the players got COVID anymore, they just keep him away from the team for 60. Because if he shows up suddenly next week, to me,
after all the guys that went on COVID protocol, why not just say it?
Yeah, well, I agree with you. So maybe
his
I'm
save
wrong.
Save percentage in his last four games is .837. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not good.
I just, not being a conspiracy theorist, it's just like, well, why didn't, like, just say something.
Yeah.
If you're Jack Campbell, say something.
That's totally fair.
I admire any guy who wants to battle through injury, no doubt. But at some point, you're not just hurting yourself, you're hurting your team.
Yeah. If you're playing injured instead of hurt, I would agree with you on that. And if it's impacting your play, then you've got to let your ego get out of the way. So we'll see. Maybe a mental reset for Jack Campbell will help him because he was quite good for the first 2 months of the season. And it just hasn't been the same goalie.
But we didn't talk at all about Leonard.
Yeah. Well,
that's the other part of the equation for Vegas. Like, I'm sorry, but they could make the playoffs. They're not going to have a chance if Lauren Brossoit and, that's what they're going to do in net.
Oh, no. Well, there's another team. I mentioned it when you first reported about his labrum. I said, add Vegas to the list of a team that will be in the goalie hunt, because if Robin Leonard can't be consistent you can't, I don't believe you can go into the playoffs with Lauren Brossoit and a raw rookie with three NHL games. Thompson.
Well, this time now, I don't know if you saw the tweet from Sin Bin Vegas overnight, not only Riley Smith, but Leonard's on crutches. So yeah.
He's gone back to Vegas.
He's gone back to Vegas. I believe this is a groin issue. Again, not a doctor, and I don't play one on TV. I think they're waiting for more imaging to understand exactly the severity of it.
Well, you know what? If you have a labrum that's a little bit banged up, and now you got a groin that's a little bit banged up, Frank, I would
maybe
say
it's time to just get both repaired.
Goalie. Yeah, I think you'd have to look at another goalie like Vegas. And hey, the other thing we haven't touched on is, and some people hated it. Some people, you know what? And I want to preface, I think the NHL needs more villains. I like some animosity. Vegas and Buffalo, there's only going to be one game in Buffalo a year now when Vegas goes there. And I'm telling you, Frank, it will be one of the loudest games. The Buffalo fans, Jack Eichel, you know what? Jack Eichel, his, for people who didn't hear the quote, basically said, man, that's the loudest it's ever been in 7 years that I was here. Now, we know that's not 100% true because there's been games in the odd where it's pretty loud. But to say that, it just infuriates the Sabres fans. Now he's, you know, villain number one even more. I think it's awesome. The NHL is so bland at times. That's not a derogatory statement to anybody, but it puts fuel on the fire to arrive.
That's not true.
Well, but to say it's not that loud, like it's not that derogatory because you take a step back and say, well, of course it's been loud here before, right? And he's basically saying, yeah, the team never won. But yeah, you were one of the main players in the team that never won. So you're kind of chirping yourself. But I like the fact that he was salty after the game. He's pissed off. They lose and Buffalo kind of dominates. The two guys he gets traded for, they both score a goal in the game. Like it's only once a year, Frank, but you watch next year when Buffalo's schedule comes out. Sabre fans, the first thing they're going to be looking for, when does Vegas come to Buffalo? And that's what you want.
I have no issue with it, but to say that it's not derogatory towards anyone, it's a shot right at Sabre fans.
Yeah, but how much of it, like derogatory to me is really like, is it that derogatory?
No, but it's basically saying you haven't cared, you don't care, and you only care because you're here to make fun of me.
Yeah, great. That's the whole point. He's
again,
becoming
I have
villain.
No issue with it, but it's a shot at a fan base that I can't blame them has been really apathetic the last handful of years because there's been no success. It's one of the great fan bases in the NHL. I think the league is better for it when the Sabres are interesting and their fan base is tied into it because it's such a great place to watch a game, but it's been a dark hole for a long, you know, they've been having 5,000, 7,000, 8,000 a night for stretches this season. That's been no good. Now, I think Jack Eichel had less frustration with Buffalo and the reception he got compared to the fact that, as you said, they lost a critical game as their season is now slipping away. And to your point, the guys that were traded for him scored.
Yeah. Like, and that's awesome. So
it's frustration from the loss, not necessarily the environment. That's the way, that's my read on it.
And I would agree with that, but and that's why I love the fact that now like Sabre fans, you need something to unify a fan base at times. And
well, when you have nothing else to cheer for, this is all you have.
100%. And so I'll tell you right now, that game is going to be sold out next year. Mark my words right now. The Buffalo Sabres they should be sending Jack Eichel chocolates and flowers to say thank you because that game next year is going to be one of the loudest games. It's going to be the ticket to want to get because people like sometimes just to want to vent their frustrations. There are going to be signs of, you know,
it's like it's Ben Simmons. Awesome. I don't know if you saw coming back to Philly last night with the Nets, like people were lined up at his hotel to boo him getting on the bus. Guy was walking around. It's like one of the great clips I've seen on social media. I love Philadelphia. Like it's the best thing ever when some guy was selling shirts after the game and had Ben Simmons' head on a penis and it said ultimate dickhead. Oh. And then some guy walks up to him and is like, hey, do you have a kid small? Like who is buying that shirt for their kid? Do you have a kid small? It's like one of the best clips ever.
Oh my gosh, that is awesome. And so see that I love it. Now I think at times we you know, at the end of the day, you know, Jack Eichel saying, oh, the fans aren't really loud. Like, yeah, it's a little, that's what a good chirp is. It's a good chirp because it's got a semblance of truth to it. And so now the fan base can say, oh yeah, Jack, well, screw you. And we're going to show you every time you come now how loud we can be. And that's awesome. That's what you want. And the other thing is for the Sabres, trust me, they, you know, the players, you know, Tuck and them, they're proud. Tuck was actually kind of excited to go to Buffalo because that's where he's from. Like, they want to turn their organization around because, as you said, Frank, it's been a dumpster fire for a long time. They've had no success.
I like that team because they scrap. They actually try.
Yeah, I give Bernardo a lot of credit, man. That team does not quit on. Their coach has them. They give you the best. They don't have a lot, but they give you the best of what they have most nights.
And that says something. Because if you could actually get the talent, I hope that he can hang on long enough to be able to enjoy the other end of it.
And you know what? The other thing, Frank, is, you know, the goaltending, we're 10 days away from trades. And, you know, you've talked to a lot of people. I've talked to a few. Everybody says it's still quiet. I still think it's going to heat up here in the final 72 hours. The Florida Panthers are looking like a juggernaut to me. The Washington Capitals are healthy. I'm still not like Samsonov's game in Edmonton. I know they lost, but he was unreal in that game. Like that game, Edmonton could have blown him out. He was fantastic in net. I'm very curious. The Pittsburgh Penguins play Vegas tonight. Like there's so many teams in the East now. We all know who's in, but I'm curious who's going to make the move. Like Toronto, we know they'd like to maybe add a goalie, but the other seven teams, like I still think Carolina is just like they're in the weeds, right? They're waiting. They're looking through as Don Waddell. And you saw the quote, the young girls hockey team. Who are you going to trade? Awesome. Like, yeah. I love that. That little girl, we should be sending her some hockey cards or something because that was awesome. Don's reaction was, whoa, shut the tape off. Like, hilarious. That, trust me, fans in Carolina are like, hey, Don, we didn't do anything last year. What are we doing this year?
No cap space.
Yeah. Oh, you got to get creative. Got
to trade someone.
Yeah. Well, they got lots of tradable players.
Don't have a first round pick.
Yeah. They got lots of tradable players, Frank.
I agree. But, you know, are you moving Vincent Trocheck? Probably not. You need your 2C. Are you trading Nino Niederreiter? Probably not. Another UFA. I've heard conversations about Brady Shea going back months, but I don't think they're recent. I think he's been pretty good this year.
He has been.
Where you tell me who they're going to pluck off.
Well, the thing about, and I've always said this about Carolina is I find that their forward group is a lot of the same players. They're very skilled, but they have a lot of similar type guys and they have so much depth that I think you could, if you had to in a trade, you know, you're trading to tweak something that you could look and say, hey, you know what, here's a player that like Kotkaniemi, obviously you're not moving because no one's going to take, but
they're close to re-signing him to a long-term extension.
Oh yeah. Like
you're definitely not trading him.
I wonder honestly, Frank, if Jesper Fast, for instance, is that, you know, he's got a year left in his contract. He's a $2 million player. He's a good player, but I think you could trade Jesper Fast when you consider, okay, we're re-signing Kotkaniemi. You know, you got Svechnikov and Aho and you got Nekesh and who does need a contract. That's the interesting one there. You mentioned, you know, are they bringing, I don't think both Niederreiter and Trocheck are coming back. One of them is going to walk as a free agent. So that'll free up.
It feels like Kotkaniemi is going to slide into Trocheck's role next season.
Yeah, like I think if you were looking to change things up, you could trade Fast. I think that's the guy you could trade.
How good is Seth Jarvis, by the way?
Oh, very skilled player, man. Watch him lots in Portland. Highly skilled guy.
I just love that they're able to add a guy like him at a young age and just, hey, go ahead, rip off 20 goals this year. I don't know. They've drafted well. They've got prospects to trade. They've been creative, you know, signing Anthony DeAngelo for $1 million. Like they've revamped their goaltending. I just, if I'm looking at the list of teams to really, really be active, I just don't see it with Carolina.
Yeah, that could be fair. I think Don Waddell's never afraid. We had him on.
No, he's in every conversation. It's possible. Like maybe something comes together where they pull it off. I'm not counting on it.
Now, what about the Dallas Stars? Huge news on the injury front yesterday in the Western Conference. We mentioned Vegas. Miro Heiskanen is out with mono. And anybody who's had mono can tell you it can be brutal for multiple months. That's a huge loss for them because they basically play four defensemen over 22 minutes a night, Frank. Now, Hakanpaa, for the last three games without him, has played an average of 25, almost 26 minutes. Now, he was playing 15 minutes a night in his first 52 games. So I'll be curious to see, can he
maintain? I love Hakanpaa.
Can he play that many minutes, you know, all the time? We'll see. But I wonder now what Jim Neal's looking at, because that's a huge blow, man. Like, that's their number one defenseman. That's a huge blow. And then look at LA. All of a sudden, Doughty banged up, right? They throw two other guys on IR, right? You mentioned Mickey Anderson. You know, he's back banged up again. So you've got, and they lost in San Jose in overtime. Like, the injury bug here, Frank, in just the last 24 hours really impacted teams in the Western Conference.
The Heiskanen one's hard because it's unpredictable. Like, there's no real timeline for Mono. You can feel really good in 2 weeks. You can feel like garbage for 3 months. Like, there's no way to speed it up, slow it down. Like, it's requires a lot of rest. Not often you see NHL players come down with something like that.
Yes. No, it's too bad because he's such a good player to watch, man. Just entertaining as heck.
And for a team that's been rolling.
Yeah. Well, that changes things a lot, man. I'm a big believer that good teams can overcome injuries for a certain time, but the longer you have players having to play above where they should be in the pecking order, and all of a sudden you've played four top four defensemen all year, now you're going to move your number five up into a top line role. Can he maintain that long? Maybe he can. Maybe this is the opportunity. Some guys do it, but it's hard to do it the longer you go. You can do it for 2 weeks, Frank, sometimes three, but now you get into 6 weeks, and usually that's where, because Hakanpaa's body, he's been used to playing 50 minutes a night. He was up 10 minutes more a night, man. Like, that's such a massive increase. Will he be able to handle that?
It takes a few games to get there. The thing I like about him is he's not the defenseman that gives up home runs. He's sort of like, he's no frills. He just gets the job done, and there's not a lot of fanfare, but he's, you know, if he's giving up something, it's singles and doubles, not triples and home runs.
Like, I remember Jason Stretch telling me on our show, and you know what? There was years in Vancouver and Chicago. He was a top forward D man. He's playing, you know, 20 minutes a night. They had some injuries. He had to play a stretch where he played 24 to 27 minutes for, like, you know, a week, 2 weeks straight. He was so tired. And he's in good shape. He could not believe the difference that those added minutes made as it added up. The first few games, like, yeah, this is unreal. I'm in the game way more. But afterwards, he's like, oh my God. He was so happy when the guy came back. He's like, oh, I can go back to playing 20 minutes. It felt like a dream. So that's 15 to 25. I wonder the long-term effects, like, when you get into 3 weeks now, and how is the recovery going to be for him? That's what I watch for.
So, speaking of minutes, I was wondering what you thought of my report from Thursday about Chris Letang, that he's asked for a 5-year deal from the Pittsburgh Penguins that would take him through age 40.
Well, good for him to ask, Frank. As we all know, anyone will tell you, if you can't ask, you'll never know what you can get if you don't ask.
Would you?
Well, no, I wouldn't. But I'm like the anti long-term deal for older players. I think the NHL should have a rule: once you're 27 years of age, no one gets more than 5-year term. I just think
the NHLPA does not approve that message.
Yeah, well, you know what? But I could show them all the numbers and why they should approve it, because it would actually benefit them. But nonetheless, I'm not doing well. 5 years at what's my cap hit, Frank?
Wait a second. I need to ask you about that. Tell me how this works. Why would less dollars because guys that are over 27 benefit players?
Because I never said it would be less dollars. I said less term. Right. So you're going to get,
but less term means less dollars. Cause at some point the team's look at the situation that's unfolding with the Anaheim Ducks and Hampus Lindholm. Okay.
Yeah.
Reported this week that they're not willing to give him a long-term deal. He's looking for 7 or 8 years. I don't think they're willing to go much past 4 or 5. So let's just, for simple math sake, let's call it $7 million a year that they're willing to pay. 7 times 5 is 35. Mm-hmm. 7 times 7 is 49. 7 times 8 is 56. That's the difference of either $14 or $21 million.
Yeah.
How is it that players would get more money? Okay.
So
for the same money,
if Hampus Lindholm is that good, right? Because I look at, there's two ways I compared it. I went to the NBA. Their star player, they have 5-year term, right? Their star, the big players are still going to get paid because they're good. Now, if your play drops off, then you're going to lose a little bit of money. But where it's hurting in the NHL is you've got a lot of cap space, Frank, that is being taken up by players who aren't even in the NHL because they're on buyout contracts. And that's where you lose the money. And that becomes a bigger issue. Guys, I mean, sitting in the minors now, and you have lots of cap space.
Lose the money how, though? At the end of the day, that player that's
not an individual. I'm talking the collective group. So it impacts
players. That's not how the union would vote, because they're talking about what ends up in my pocket, not how minuscule does the 50-50 pie split change.
Okay. Here's based the other on thing, Frank.
Money that's look outside the system.
Look at the percentage of players. Because if you talk about the collective, look at the percentage of players who are over the age of 28 who sign a 5-year term. We're talking what? 14% of the group? 15%? So that's why I'm saying if the majority, it would actually benefit the majority. They'll never do it. The top end guys are like, we don't want to do it because they've played their whole career
just to get to 27 or 28 and get to free agency to the point where they can get one of those contracts.
But lots of guys are getting those contracts earlier now, the big guys, right? But it's mostly and you're right, Frank. I get why some would be opposed, but look where all.
How do you think Nathan McKinnon would feel if you were to say, hey, congratulations.
He would
love it
because he would be getting paid more right now. His long-term deal is what screwed him.
No, but your proposal was only for guys over 27 or 28.
Yes.
He's going to get to that point now after probably what he feels like was the shaft, even though he signed it and he was comfortable with it at the time. And then you're going to now turn around and say, hey, congratulations. You just played through that deal to make it to this point to now say you've got a 5-term limit.
Yeah, but Nathan McKinnon is the outlier here, right? For the most part. There's very few guys who are over exceeding the contract like he did.
But how many guys when they're getting to 27, Johnny Gaudreau, like every year there's guys that hit this age that need an extension, Hampus Lindholm, whether they make it to market or not, to say you're going to have a 5-year term, they're never going to go for it.
Well, I agree that they won't. But the reality is Johnny Gaudreau, like I always use Nick Lidstrom as my prime example, Frank. Nick Lidstrom was the best defenseman, arguably the best player. Go look at how many long-term contracts he signed. Because when you're that good, you'll still get paid. Because like the best players should be that confident in themselves that they don't have to worry about, I need to get overpaid because I'm going to suck in the last few years of the
contract. That's not the worry, I don't think. The worry is that you're going to get hurt and blow your knee out and that you won't have the opportunity to sign those contracts later. It's easy to say Nick Lidstrom, but by that point, he was already in the twilight of his career. When the salary cap came around, he was already in a 35 and over contract and had banked all that money from years and years and years of playing with the Detroit Red Wings pre-salary cap, which spent out the arse.
Oh, yeah. But even look at the...
He made $42 million just in the last 6 years of his career. He probably made 80 before that. I'm just guessing. I don't know.
No. I can go look at... He actually, even before the lockout, he was signing short-term deals. But the other, Frank, I can show you the numbers again on name the last player. Because that does get brought up lots. What if I get injured? Well, we can show the numbers on the elite players. How many guys suffer a career-ending injury on when they sign at 31? It's rare, right? Like, sure, some happen, but it's low again. So
that was a gigantic diversion, which I enjoyed. Let's get back to Chris Letang.
Yeah.
So my understanding is it was a 5-year ask at a raise of what he's currently making at 725.
Yeah. Well, there's zero chance I would do that.
Who is going to do that, I guess, is the question.
No, I don't think anybody would sign him to 5-year term at 7.5 million, right? I would be quite surprised at that. Again, though, hey, the defense salary went up last year, so who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. But now Chris Letang has had an unreal season.
He's had an unreal decade.
Yeah, so I get why he's asking for it. I totally understand it. right? And I've always said, hey, you can ask. And it, I would always ask for what I want to get, because it is, he's like, hey, if I can get 5 years of this, unreal. You ask for that, now they'll negotiate. I would love to see when his contract is signed, what he gets, right? Because I think he can get a Joe Pavelski 3 years at 7.5. I think Joe Pavelski could be the recent example that he, Chris Letang could use and say, hey, look what Pavelski did, and he maintained it, and he was 7 mil. I think
Pavelski, you know, might get a raise.
I play more minutes. Yeah. Well, Pavelski might now. You're right. Right. So, which but is
three
a prime
sounds
example,
much more
Frank.
Reasonable than five.
Yeah. But you know what? Think about it now, right? You signed Joe Pavelski for 3 years at 7 mil. If that would have been a 5 year contract for 7 mil, people would have said, oh my God, what? That is a big risk. But now Joe Pavelski did it for three. He's probably going to get another 2 or 3 year deal for three. And it's the same amount of money, maybe even slightly higher.
Are you changing your tune? Would you do it?
No, I wouldn't do it for five. I would do it for three, same as Pavelski, because I think that's the precedent. Who would be the last? Has there been a precedent contract that I could look and say, okay, here's a guy, similar skill, because Chris Letang's elite player. And I'm always willing to look at elite players longer than I would any other player. Because it's the middle of the road guys, Frank, in free agency that screw you. Johnny Gaudreau, if he signed a 7 year deal, I would not be that concerned about him not living up to, because Johnny Gaudreau is in the elite category of players. It's the guys like Oposo and Skinner and Lucic and those type of players, the long-term contracts, that's what they hurt the league. But in the case of Letang, who's an elite defenseman, if I could find a precedent that said, hey, there's few other guys who've done it, sure, but they haven't. So I would realistically say, hey, Chris, here's 3 years Pavelski. We're willing to go 7.5, which is even more. I think that would be a very fair deal. And Chris, if you're still good, trust me, we want you in Pittsburgh, but a 5 year deal is just too big of a risk.
Is it? I'm not advocating one way or the other, but my whole thinking is like, what way do you want to go as a franchise? And I guess how these playoffs go, like if they lose in the first round again, you're just like, okay, we're not. But their team has been really competitive. And yes, the only way they remain competitive is if they keep Letang, I think, because like their back end gets super thin in a hurry.
And if you're Chris Letang, like your whole career has been in Pittsburgh, you have unreal success there. So let's say Pittsburgh offers you three at 7.5, Frank, and you're like, you know what? I'm not taking. Well, what if the only better offer is four at 7.5 in an organization that you truly don't know? Because we, until you're in it.
What are the odds the Penguins are going to be good for 5 years? That's my question. Would you even want to be there in the last couple?
Valid point.
Sidney Crosby only has three left.
Yeah, but it's hard to write. We've been writing off we've thought the Pens were going to fall off for like 4 years.
Okay, right? But it has to happen at some point.
Does it?
Well, yeah. I mean, look at their cap picture as a whole. So you've got Rust, you've got Malkin, and you've got Letang all up. The only way this works moving forward is keeping two of the three.
Yeah, which I think is possible.
So which two would you pick?
Well, see, and this is where I think you have to put on your Bill Belichick hat and remove emotion from the equation. And you have to look and say, okay, if we can get two players, because of Jenny Malkin, sadly, has injury history. Every year he seems to miss 20 games.
Okay.
And that's been there for a long time.
This year he's got 24 points in 22 games.
100%, Frank. But if he's constantly missing games and I'm weighing my options, like I would like to keep Malkin and Letang, ideally, those would be the first two choice. But financially in a cap world, can you do that?
Right. So ballpark Rust at 5.75. That's kind of it might even be north of that now because he's had such a good year, but that's kind of the world I think he's in. 5.75, 6 million. So you've got
Rust, what's the term though?
I don't know. Let's say 5 years.
Okay. Yeah. Like what? Like Malkin's on record as saying, I'm a rich man and I appreciated his honesty. Something about if Jenny is like, now he's made a lot of
money,
right?
Good, are the Penguins, I wonder sometimes watching them if they're better without him. And I don't mean that in like, obviously you can add a Hart Trophy winner to your roster. Like, sure, you'd want to do it, but they play different when they have him.
Yeah. Like, I think if they were picking two from your cap world, you know, the cheaper two combined is going to be Rust and Letang. So that's where, and you know, they're good players on your team. So
but Rust is also 29. Like, I don't know that I'm giving him that kind of term.
Well, dude, that, I was just going to mention it that, but you love the longer terms.
No, I'm just saying the players love the right of the longer terms.
Oh yes, that's fair. And I totally get it.
I that's not how I would construct my team if I were playing fantasy GM. Yeah.
So which two would you sign?
I would probably only sign one.
And who would be the one?
Letang.
Cause he's a defenseman. And he plays.
I just like, look at their group, like John Marino, you know, I like him long-term. You know, Marcus Pedersen's contract isn't very good. Brian Dumoulin is sort of your consummate pro.
Oh,
but they're not teaming with top four defensemen, and they're hard to get. So if you want to remain competitive, then you probably have to keep Letang, and you got to find a way to keep him happy.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, you saw Burke's comments about Kasperi Kapanen is being a disappointment, right? Like I wonder if they just let him walk and that frees up 3.2 mil.
Well, it's his arb case is going to be in the fours somewhere just based on stats alone. It feels like Kapanen is trending towards healthy scratch territory. Mm-hmm. That's what Josh Yoey reported earlier this week from The Athletic. And I don't know. I mean, this is an interesting team. Like, you're probably going to have to give Danton Heinen a raise. I don't know. They're in a tough spot. They've picked once in the first round in eight drafts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Eventually that might wear on them. That's totally valid. But yeah, I would go with Letang, Frank, to wrap it up. I'd have no problem at even 3 years at 7.5 mil. I could live with that at 3 years. It's just
but the question is, can term. He?
Yeah. Well, it comes. Is another team really going to give him five? And would he go there and be happy? Like that's where I think Chris Letang's in a position. He's made so much money. It can't just be about the money with Chris Letang. I'd be surprised because anyone will tell money doesn't give you happiness. Mm-hmm. So maybe he wants a challenge of just something different. You know what? I want to play in another organization to see how life is on the outside. Fair, but it's not always better. Doesn't mean it's always comfortable, right? Then you got to look at his family life and kids and school and everything like that. So, you know, there's got to be more than just money in his equation, I would think.
Well, $74.505 million are his career earnings after this season. So I would hope that at this point, it's not about that.
Well, yeah. Hey, guy who's rivaling that in salary so far in his career, Tyler Yaremchuk. Let's bring him in.
Gambling Ty, winnings.
Yeah. Just on winnings alone. Hey, Ty.
I actually did go 3 for 3 last night in my points by pick. So I'm eating good heading into a weekend here. Fill in the blank. Or sorry, that is fill in the blank. Is it? I prepped the blank question. So we're doing that again today. That's a brain slip on my part. But either way, it's presented by DoorDash. No matter what we do, DoorDash, 25% off with the promo code RUNDOWNDD. That's 25% off on your first order. And you get no delivery fees. Shout out to DoorDash.
Ding dong.
All right, let's jump right into it. You said you wanted it on Friday episode.
Yes, so I'll give it I love it. Oh, God, so good.
Like I said, we're doing fill in the blank again because I just prepped those questions. So the first one I got with the Miro Heiskanen news, the chances of the Stars trading John Klingberg are blank percent. Frank?
One.
All right.
I don't, they weren't trading him anyway. And I think now why, I mean, why would you?
I'm going zero.
Fair enough. You have to at least allow for some possibility that someone comes in and just totally knocks your sock
off. 0.01. Okay. So technically that's a percent.
Feels excellent. Like a Edmonton Oilers save percentage. Sorry. Too soon?
Never. Rasmus Ristolainen got that big deal with the Philadelphia Flyers. Rasmus Ristolainen will be traded or bought out by year blank of that extension. Jason? Or will he play the whole thing? Maybe. I don't know.
He'll play the whole. It's 5 years. He'll play the whole contract.
I don't know if he'll play the whole contract. It's
Well, maybe not all in Philly, but I don't see him getting bought out of that contract.
So do you think he'll be traded by a year? That was part of it.
Traded in a year. No, everything went wrong in Philly this year. I think Ryan Ellis really hurts them, him not being in. So no, I think that Ristolainen will be there. Now, will the same GM be there? Because that's when it changes, right? If you're a GM who signed a guy and then you get fired, the new GM comes in, there's no emotional connection. So that's where there's the chance that maybe in the later years of that, he could get traded. But I'll say he spends at least 3 years in Philly.
I think emotional connection, what you said, is what got the Flyers in trouble. I mean, you trade a first, a second, and Robert Hägg to get Rasmus Ristolainen last year. How often is it that you see a player traded for that type of haul to then re-sign for less money than he was making? Have you ever seen it? I racked my brain, Jay, yesterday trying to find an example. The only one I can kind of come up with is Taylor Hall, but that was a one-year deal for $8 million to re-sign for $4 times $6 million. So It was a one-off exception. And he also wasn't traded for a first-round pick. Taylor Hall only got a second. I cannot think of an example in recent NHL history that illustrates, frankly, what the Flyers are admitting is just how bad the season has been for Rasmus Ristolainen.
Yeah. Well, even he's admitting it a little bit, is he not?
I'm sure their initial ask had to be in the fours. That's my guess. To end up at 5-1.
Flyers, yeah.
I would say this was a face-saving mechanism because their only other option was to trade him for 30 cents on the dollar and get a third back or something. I don't know. I guess he'll play out the contract, but it's not pretty. He's a human nail gun.
Yeah, I love that line. I was laughing.
That's what he is. He's a human nail gun.
If the Toronto Maple Leafs decide to make a move between the pipes and Marc-Andre Fleury is unavailable, who should be their number one target? Who should be their number one target? Maybe not who is, but like, who do you view as the number one fit, Frank?
Marc-Andre Fleury. And I don't give me the not available thing. I think you get down on your hands and knees and beg. He's the only true difference maker available.
All right, Jay.
Well, yeah, it's hard to argue with that. So, The only other option I think that that would make sense, that could be a legit upgrade, is Varlamov. But, you know, he's got term. He's got 1 year. It's $5 million. So obviously you'd have to include Mrazek going the other way and shed some other salary to make it work. But that's the other goalie who I see is a distinct, legit, better option than what they have.
Can I ask a dumb question?
There's no such thing as dumb questions, Frank.
If you're the Blackhawks, why wouldn't you take Mrazek back? You have no goalie.
Yeah. Oh, for the Fleury trade? Yeah, I don't. Yeah, no, I was talking the Islanders.
You would make Toronto pay a little extra in terms of what they give up.
Yeah.
But if it means getting a first round pick instead of a second or something, would you do it?
If I'm the Blackhawks? Oh, yeah. 100%.
Why do you care if Mrazek's your backup next year?
Well, you're not, and you're going to have to get to the, you're going to have to spend.
You're going to have to spend, but you also, if you look at it, I looked at Mrazek's buyout, Frank. It's not awful if Chicago felt like, you know what, we would do that.
You know who has a wacky buyout, by the way, who made it onto our trade targets list? And I doubt it gets to this point, but Mackenzie Blackwood has a wild buyout because he's 25.
Yeah, he's a third.
Not only is it a third, but they'd actually get a cap credit for next season of $637.5 million, and then a cap charge the following year for $687.5 million. So it's basically a wash. You can buy him out for a third and have no cap penalty, which is kind of crazy. Anyway, that is
really weird. Yeah.
It's a very unique scenario. And I don't think it'll get to that point, but there was a player a couple of years ago that had this same exact thing that I pointed out from Ottawa. And Toronto traded for him and then bought him out and used the cap credit after I wrote about the story.
Huh. That is interesting. All right. Wrapping it up with a points bet bonus question. Shout out to our friends at Points Bet. If you are a Leafs fan or a Sens fan or just someone who lives in Ontario, Points Bet is coming. They got the license and all that. So you'll be able to use PointsBet in Ontario soon. I'm going to look at their Stanley Cup odds. Here's the top 10 in order. Avalanche, Lightning, Panthers, Leafs, Knights, Hurricanes, Flames, Penguins, Wild, and then the Rangers at 20 to 1 are at the bottom of that list. Which team will see their odds go up the most after the trade deadline, like day after the trade deadline? Who's going to be the one that makes the sexy splash that has the sports books jacking up their odds, Frank?
Florida.
Yeah, 7-1 right now. I can see that going up a little bit. Jay?
Well, I think Calgary, because they're too low right now. So they're going to go up because some of those other teams are going to go down. And Calgary will go up. They'll just continue to win. I'm not sure they'll make a monumental move, but they're second best team right now in the West. So I think they're way too low, to be honest. You got too many East teams altogether. That doesn't make any sense to me.
But we're talking like who's going to make such a splash that it changes the odds at 3 o'clock on March 21st.
Maybe it is the Flames. Maybe they add another piece.
Nah, they're going to add a defenseman, I think, but they don't have, they're dollars in, dollars out. They're not in LTIR. They have no space.
Yeah. But I'll still go with the Flames because I think they're undervalued, right? And I think they're rated lower and they're going to go up.
All right, there you go. That's a wrap on another edition of what was supposed to be buy or sell, but ended up being fill in the blank, brought to you by our friends at DoorDash.
Ding dong.
So good.
Oh, God. Now, Frank, I was quickly looking up Rasmus Ristolainen's numbers, and I'm comparing him to all the other, like Sanheim, Provorov, Braun, and Ristolainen, because those are the top 4D. They all played, similar minutes. When you look at Ristolainen, he played 950 games, and Sanheim played 1,050 and five more games. So, they're averaging about the same. If you look at their Corsi fours are all between 46 and 48. Their Fenwick is 46 to 48, and Ristolainen's, 47.9. Their shots four percentage, they're all 47 except Sanheim, who's a 48. Their goals four percentage, Ristolainen's is at 46, Sanheim's at 50. Their expected goals, he's second best amongst their top four. So when I'm looking at people, Ristolainen is so terrible. When I look at his numbers, that whole defense core is basically even, right? Like we're talking one or two different percent from 46, 47, 48. So when I look at it, I think sometimes the expectations on who Ristolainen is high, but at a $5 million cap hit, I'm not sure at 5 years, it's that egregious, really. Like I know, because his numbers analytically, just, and I was from Natural Stat Trick, aren't that so far gone compared to the other top four guys in Philly. They all seem to be collectively struggling, which is why I think that mirrors how that team's been this year.
I think if this were to happen in a vacuum, if the Flyers were to have just signed Rasmus Ristolainen as a free agent, let's pretend he's in Buffalo and they signed him this coming July to that contract, I don't think anyone would say anything. Yeah. You'd be like, oh, well, maybe, like, I guess you could make, you know what I mean? Like, it's sort of in the realm of, okay, that makes sense. Sort of. Yeah. But this is after trading for a first, a second, and another player that's now going to get flipped at the deadline.
So you're saying they signed him for less.
It's because they doubled down after then having a horrendous season.
Yeah, but his season, when I look at it, I think the team had a horrendous season. You're right. He wasn't a leader by any stretch.
So Micah Blake McCurdy, Hockey Viz, had an unreal thread on Ristolainen yesterday, just showing on with graphs how he's gotten caved in defensively. Absolutely caved in.
Yeah.
So,
but I'm looking at,
I watched the game again, put aside the numbers. I watched the game and he can't think the game.
Okay. That's fair.
I'm not demeaning a player when I say this again, human nail gun. He just runs around drilling guys and he's a physical presence. And I get where, if you're the Flyers, where you say, well, our team's been insanely easy to play against the last couple of years. What, now we're going to take some of the sandpaper off of it? I just think they were in a spot where they felt like they had to sign this contract because they didn't want to trade him for a third round pick, and they didn't want to let him walk for nothing after giving up so much, when sometimes that's actually the best course of action.
So if he would have,
like, take the NFL, for instance, okay. Yeah. Like, this is a Philly example because it's current events. The Eagles trade Carson Wentz last year to the Indianapolis Colts. He doesn't have a good season. They got first round picks for him. Okay.
Yeah.
The Colts say this guy is no good. We're now trading him to the Washington Commanders for 2/3.
Right.
They sold for 40 cents on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes so, that's just the best play.
So you're saying the Flyers should have just traded him for whatever second and
started over. That's personally what I would have done just watching him play. But again, I'm not a manager and I'm like, this is not my team. That's pretty much how in unison the fan base feels.
And then if he goes to, let's say that happened and the team that acquired him, whatever, they don't sign or they sign him. Do you think his contract would have really looked at it? Because he's probably what, like a number four defenseman?
Probably.
Maybe a number three if he plays his best.
On a good team, he's a third pair guy.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's fair. Hey, there's lots of those guys. I totally agree with you on that one. So the Flyers, maybe they think if they can play him with, you know, with more of a puck mover that, you know, that can limit his ability to be the more than just a, what do you call him, a human nail gun?
Yeah, well, it's a kind of an awesome nickname, but or awesome way to be.
Yeah, buddy, call him the nail gun. I'll tell you, the shin pad assassin is, I've had three nicknames of guys that I really like. The shin pad assassin is what I called Andre Sekera, because for the longest time in Edmonton, man, he could find any opposing forward shin pads better than anyone. He couldn't get shots through. Eric Belanger, I called him the Belanger triangle because the offense disappeared when he came to Edmonton. It was crazy. And then Pronger was the human rake. Because he was tall and with his chiclets. And Chris is such a good sense of humor because people always thought he'd be upset about that. Well, he did a bumper that said, hey, this is Chris Pronger, a.k.a. the human rake. And you're listening to the Gregor Show. It's still one of the greatest ones. So awesome. Good nicknames, Frank. Go with the human nail gun, buddy. You gotta sell it yourself. I like it.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah. Get people in Philly. Right? Get people in Phil. They'll be all over that. Ask the guy, Frank.
They're too busy crying into their beer with this contract.
Yeah. But you know what? Just ask the guy who bought his kid the child, the Ben Simmons child t-shirt.
The kid small. Hey, do you have a kid small? He's like, no, only a medium.
He will definitely.
It's one of the best ever.
You could get the human nail gun t-shirt made. I guarantee you it would sell. Guarantee it.
So good.
Yeah. Frank, have yourself a good weekend. So do you think there'll be a trade before Monday's pod?
At the beginning of the week, I would have said yes. I'm not so certain now.
Okay.
But there's a lot of injuries that have popped up, so maybe.
Yes. This will be fine, man. The next 10 days, teams, there's still some in the hunt. And don't look now, Frank, but the Vancouver Canucks, they win tonight and Vegas loses, which is very likely in Pittsburgh with all their injuries. Suddenly, the Canucks would be on pace 1 point behind Vegas. Now, Edmonton's in that race as well. But the Canucks have put themselves at least in the conversation of the playoff race.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Delivered by DoorDash.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports-ad-free. That's amazon.com/sports-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, hockey fans, listen up because we've got something special coming your way this playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and let me tell you, it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with four questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle. And here's a sneak peek into some of those questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you got to pick the winning team. That sounds simple, right? But there's more. You got to decide if the total amount of goals in the game will be over or under a certain amount, and that's where the real strategy starts to kick in. Next up, you're picking who's going to find the back of the net first, and you're going to want to be careful because that's one that could be cooked early on in the game. And finally, you got to predict which period is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That's up to you to decide. Now let's talk about prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? For the daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards to treat yourself to some fresh nation gear, and you might even win a jersey from your favorite team. And for the big dogs, those who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.